testability of truth claims is an essential truth that is behind the logical positivist that we can't neglect. Okay, Ludwig Wittgenstein, the most important analytic philosopher, the most important influence on modern semantics, and for that matter, even biblical studies of any one in the 20th century. The life and works of Wittgenstein, 1889 to 1951. He was the youngest son of a wealthy Viennese steel magnate. His father was Jewish but embraced Protestantism. His mother was Catholic and baptized him Catholic. He studied engineering in Berlin. 1908, went to Manchester to study. His inventions include a jet reaction propeller for aircraft. He came to Cambridge to study under Bertrand Russell, 1911. He wrote much of his famous Tractatus in 1921 while he was in prison camp as a captured soldier, where he also apparently read the New Testament and Tolstoy. After the war, he gave away an inherited fortune from his father. He thought that he had solved all problems of philosophy with his Tractatus, which is really his master's work under Russell, and retired from philosophy to teach school. In 1927 or 29, he met at various times with members of the Vienna Circle, but he was never part of it, nor did he believe in empirical verifiability. He returned to Cambridge in 29 and was made a fellow the following year. He taught at Cambridge until the war, 1947, when he worked as a hospital porter. 1948, he secluded himself in Ireland. After visiting the U.S. in 49, he discovered that he suffered from cancer. He died at Cambridge in 1951. His most important books are The Notebooks, 1914-16, The Proto-Tractatus, 1914-18, Lectures and Conversations on Aesthetic, Psychology, and Religious Belief, 30-38, The Blue and Brown Books, Remarks on Foundation Mathematics, Zero on Certainty, and his most important late work, which means his mature philosophy, Philosophical Investigations. Most important influences on him, philosophical: Kant by way of Schopenhauer, his lifestyle, Tolstoy, Dostoevsky, his religious belief, Kierkegaard and Augustine. So he was a believer, he was a kind of existentialist believer, if you would, neo-orthodox believer, but he is often thought to be an unbeliever. The philosophy of Wittgenstein, his early period, the Tractatus Logico-Philosophicus. Wittgenstein himself said that the point of the book is ethical. In the preface he says, "Thus the aim of the book is to set a limit to thought, or rather, not to thought, but to the expression of thoughts. For in order to be able to set a limit, thinkable, that is, we should have to be able to think what cannot be thought. It will therefore only be in language that the limit can be set, and what lies on the other side of the limit will simply be nonsense." And point seven is, "What we cannot speak about, we must pass over in silence." In a letter to a publisher, he wrote about a sentence that he wanted to include in the preface: "My work consists of two parts, the one presented here, plus all that I have not written, and is precisely the second part that is the most important one." These quotations and other personal remarks count against the traditional interpretation of seeing that Tractatus is primarily a logical and anti-metaphysical treatise. The project of the Tractatus is Kantian, namely to set a limit for thought, to show that we must stay on our side of the gulf. Only in Wittgenstein's case, he's doing it in the linguistic tradition, and so he does it out of language. So he's trying to use language to prove that language is the limits. You can't go beyond language, and language can't go beyond this side of the gulf. Second, the method is that of logical atomism in the assumption of an isomorphic relationship between language and the world. Language mirrors the world. Thus, all that can be expressed in language are propositions of natural science. Propositions can express nothing that is higher. That is, no transcendental propositions about ethics, aesthetics, or God can be expressed. you can see why he was taken for a logical positivist by many people, because there's a similarity, especially in the result of his thinking. His later philosophy was found in Philosophical Investigation. Section 1 of the Investigations presents, via a quote from Augustine, a particular picture of the essence of human language that contains the following theses. The function of language is to state facts. All words are names, the referential theory of meaning. The meaning of a name is the object denoted. Meaning is taught by ostensive definition. All of these theses are rejected in the Investigations as being an oversimplification of language, or in the case of D, mistaken. An ostensive definition can be variously interpreted in every case, or as in C, shown to be absurd by giving examples. Theses which are perhaps not illustrated by Augustine but are closely connected with the picture theory of meaning and come in for criticism are the following. Meaning is a matter of producing mental images. Analysis of proposition equal clarification of proposition. Words have a determinate sense. Wittgenstein introduces four significant concepts in the course of discussing the above theses. Family resemblances, language games, and forms of life. And that's the heart of his view, which we'll elaborate a little more later. So we have an early and a later Wittgenstein. The early Wittgenstein was very similar to the Vienna Circle, that you can't talk meaningfully about God. The later Wittgenstein said you can talk meaningfully about God, but the limits of language make it necessary that you not talk in picture language, in correspondent language, in analogy or univocal, but it's going to turn out to be equivocal language about God. Religious language is placed here in the realm of the inexpressible. Religious discourse can have no factual meaning. There is an unbridgeable gulf between fact and value. God talk is nonsense, as it's the realm of value, and you're using fact talk to talk about value talk.
I don't understand how
the answer is exactly the same as we've given for Kant about three times. He was trying to clear the way for faith, get rid of all this philosophical rubble so he could truly believe.
But then he could not be a believer in our definition of the time, because we never said that Kant was a believer in our sense of
belief. Well, Kant believed in a theistic God, really deistic, because there were no miracles. But Kant believed in a God out there and up there who had created the world, so in that sense it's our sense of the word God, but he didn't believe that you could talk meaningfully about that God. And Wittgenstein, the same thing. He believes in a Christian view of God. He just doesn't believe that religious language is descriptive of God. You'll see what he does mean. I mean, it's far more redeeming than you might think at this stage of what I've expressed. So hold on and you'll see the rest of it.
Over breaking a minute, on the top of page 56, Wittgenstein uses the fourth concept in three are mentioned.
Well, that's a good point. What is unsaid is more important than what is said. Yes. I don't know the answer to that. There's a mistake there. Either I left out the fourth one, which we'll see when we go through these, or it should say three. And I, at this point, I don't remember which is the right answer to that. But since what is unsaid is more important, maybe we can make one up here as we go along. No, I don't make, when I say believer, I don't make any pronouncement on anyone's salvation. I simply mean believer in God, theist. Whether Wittgenstein was saved, whether he believed that Christ died for his sins and rose from the dead and accepted Christ as a Savior, I don't know. There's no record of that. But since he loved Kierkegaard and read the New Testament, it's not impossible either. Okay, religious language is placed in the realm of the inexpressible. It can have no factual meaning. There is an unbridgeable gulf. And four, it is clear from the notebooks that such feelings as a feeling of dependence and the recognition that to believe in a God means to see that the facts of the world are not the end of the matter, Tractatus 11, are things which Wittgenstein, quote, knows, but are not expressible in language. They are outside the limits of language and thought. How does he know them? He knows them intuitively. He knows them mystically. He knows them, you know, whatever, but he does not know them cognitively and descriptively. He knows them the way Plotinus knows there's a one up there on the top. Five, because the higher and transcendent are inexpressible, this is not to say they are totally incommunicable, for they can be shown but not said. This is called the doctrine of showing and saying, kind of like Wittgensteinian show and tell. You can show God, but you can't say God. God can be revealed to us, but he can't be known in a cognitive sense. An apparent contradiction of Tractatus is the fact that although propositions about language are employed, they are strictly speaking nonsense because they are not propositions of natural science. He acknowledges that they are nonsense and can only serve as elucidation. The kindest interpretation is to put this in the category of the doctrine of showing and saying. Otherwise, it is inconsistent. Now, let me describe the point. Either Wittgenstein is totally inconsistent because he says, here is language, and language can tell you about the world, and here's the mystical, here's where God is, and language does not refer to the mystical. But he talks about it. So he uses language about this realm. So either he's flatly self-defeating, or he does not intend you to take language as descriptive, but just evocative there. For one or the other. In either case, you're still left with equivocal God talk. You're still left with no descriptive talk of God. In the investigation, he does not directly speak about religious discourse, but seems to indicate that praying and theology are legitimate and meaningful linguistic activities. Praying is mentioned as a language game. Now, don't let this word game fool you. He's not talking about kid around, have fun with. A game means that which has a set of rules. So he's using game as a serious game. Every linguistic scholar must have a set of rules. You can't do language studies without a set of rules. And that he calls language game. And every language game has its own set of rules. Since stating facts is only one of a multiplicity of meaningful linguistic activity, this means there's no a priori, prior to experience, bar against the meaningfulness of religious language. So contrary to the impression you get in the Tractatus, in philosophical investigations, he is not ruling out in advance that religious language could be meaningful. Secondly, since language games have an intrinsic criteria of meaning and religious language is a language game, it must be judged by its own standards and not by one imposed on it from the outside. Wittgenstein is a fideist. Internally, inside of your own faith, you can speak meaningfully about it. But don't assume that that's descriptive of ultimate reality or you can set down any test, verifiability, falsifiability for it. You're locked up in your own linguistic bubble with internal criteria, but it is meaningful to talk about it. The only problem is you don't know whether your God talk is talk about God.